Dr. Kimball completed his doctorate.
Well, no, he had not yet, see. That was the point, and that could be used as a reason not to keep him. I had my doctorate, so there was no reason not to keep me, except they had to find some reason to for it. And ultimately, I think I was the victim of a plot designed to try to drive me out, but that's another story. So it was a very insecure situation for some of us for a period of years. So those of us that had gotten ourselves tarred with the revolutionary brush had no choice but to hang together and try our honest best to survive, and if possible counterattack if we could find any basis for doing so, try to survive the situation. So we lived in that kind of an atmosphere. It was a kind of an interesting one. It was in McCarthy era and all the rest. And when you're young, you have all sorts of heroic notions. And so we were involved in a great crusade, I suppose, in our own minds. But it was insecure for us. Gregory had a few friends he talked a lot to about what was going on the front shed, as he used to call it, and what he was expected to do. And he told them that he was expected to get rid of Kimball. So this information flowed back to us through our network. I mean, some of these people were double agents. They talked to both sides. So we found out about what they were up to. I don't know if I should tell you the story of the efforts to dismiss Kimball or not, but I should leave that for him to tell. Maybe I should leave that for him to tell.
Okay. You could tell me about the plot against yourself.
Well, I don't know whether it was a plot or not, but one day I was called into Gregory's office, and he said that I'd sworn at one of the secretaries. Now, I'm not given to using swear words very much. Or that I had gotten into an argument with another faculty member with the secretary present and used foul language. I think this was probably what was going to be used, whether this could have been made to open up and whatever. Eventually, the people that were going to testify against me kind of backed out. Involved Corbett, Massaro, and some people. They eventually backed away from this whole business. They know much more about it than I do. I was just too much. One thing time for a tenure while I was granted tenure, for whatever reason.
Do you remember what year that was?
Well, we had a 5-year tenure law. I'd been away one year at the University of Wisconsin. See, when did I go back there?
Well, you came in 51.
Came in 51, and after about a year or two, I bought a house where we now live, and I'd just gotten it fixed up to live in, and I got a call to come to the University of Wisconsin as a visiting lecturer. '55-'56. So I hadn't been given tenure yet at that time, I don't believe. Let's see. I would have been up for first tenure review in 52, 3, second year, 53, 4, third year, 54, 5. 55-6 would have been the year of decision on tenure. Well, I went off to the University of Wisconsin on a visiting lectureship and then returned in subsequent year. So it must have been the subsequent year of giving tenure. I think that's the way it worked. It was a 5-year system. I think the decision was made that time. I don't remember anymore. It was very important to me at the time, but I really, shows how much things slip from the memory.
Yeah, you mentioned that you bought a house. Do you live in Long Beach?
Yeah. We bought the house we now live at 2810 Milton Granny. We've lived there ever since. Unlike many people who moved from one house to another, we stayed in the original lot.
So that by the time there were more serious troubles with the administration you had tenure in.
Right. Well, that's true.
How did...
The year before I left for Wisconsin was, I think, the year that Neffert was made to dismiss Kimball, but it must have been, because it couldn't have been the year that I was away, that he would have come up that year for tenure. I don't know. Was I granted tenure before I went off to Wisconsin? Was a decision made in 54-5? Still on two in my first year, 52-3, 53-4, 54-5. Yeah, that would have been the year the decision was made. So maybe I had tenure before I went off to Wisconsin.
What did you tell the people in Madison about the things that you had encountered in Longview?
Well, I wrote some to my major professor about it, and old Professor Naplin in Wisconsin said, forget the politics, forget the politics, don't get involved in all that sort of nonsense, teach your classes, do your research, publish, just stay out of it. That was his advice. So he wasn't very sympathetic, and I didn't think I wanted to talk too much about the faculty back there about it, except maybe some of the younger faculty. When I got back there, I was still among the professors whom I'd been trained in graduate school. And the reason I was back was that my major professor had retired, so there theoretically was an opening in the university in the British Empire history. And I was one of Naplin's graduate students. And I never knew whether I really was being looked at and whether there was a chance of my staying or not. I didn't want to ask it quite that bluntly, and I never could really perceive exactly what was going on in the politics of the situation. So I kept my nose to the grindstone pretty well at Wisconsin, trying to make the best impression I can. Didn't want to complain too much about this place. So I didn't want to seem to be a complaining, difficult type. Except for a couple of younger faculty, I don't think I talked much about it.
But didn't the faculty at Wisconsin have more to say about how the university is run than was run than the faculty at Long Beach did at that time?
Oh, yeah, sure. But, of course, that's something you don't know as a graduate student, normally, a great deal. It all depends. Some graduate, I gather that some of the faculty here developed very close personal ties with some of the faculty in the graduate schools where they were trained. Wisconsin was a little more aloof, and the man I trained under was pretty aloof, and he was kind of one of the grand old men of the department, and not easy to get close to. He was probably as friendly with me as he was with anybody, but I didn't feel it. He was somebody I could confide in, as a father or as a friend. He certainly didn't tell me anything about what was going on in the university. So you never, as graduate students, we knew damn little. They kept that pretty much to themselves. Some graduate schools are different. The graduate students penetrate what's going on in the faculty and they figure out everything. And I was always amazed at how this had happened, because at Wisconsin, in the circles in which I moved at least, it hadn't happened. Of course, remember, I was away in England for 2 years. So that those 2 years, I might have gotten, when I started my research and so on, I might have gotten closer and more involved and might have gotten to know people. People I helped as a teaching assistant, one of them was just newly hired, and so he didn't know much about it. So that was part of the problem. And when I got there as a visiting faculty member, nobody really took me aside and said, look, this is the way things are around here. These are the problems. These are the way that the people are lined up. These are the issues over which they're presently in controversy and about which they have strong feelings and so on. So I didn't know anything about the way it was. I never did really figure the place out. I found out a lot after I left. As I was leaving, a lot of people said, ah, well, you should have known all along that this was this and all that. So. But I never did. It's not easy to penetrate an old established institution. They managed, one had a feeling that they ran their own affairs, that they were an important force in the university, and Appleton was a powerful force in university affairs. All that I recognized and knew. People said, for example, that he led the fight to get a new university built, library building, get it high on the priority list, and that he was part of a faculty group that threatened to bring an end to the existing administration of the university unless they built a library pretty damn soon. You know, you've heard things like that, and he was a very powerful figure. But I didn't understand the politics of the University of Wisconsin. Now, as we began to think seriously of creating institutions for faculty involvement on this campus in what would be called university affairs. Now, mind you, we were always involved in the affairs of the social science division. I mean, we had meetings and talked things out, talked about the social science thing. You know, we were told this is the way it's going to be, this is the way it's going to go, but it's up to you to actually, you know, put it together. And it was really carried by either people being persuaded or pressured to go along by Gregory. Some of us probably were a minority and voted against it all along, so we participated in that sense. What's that?
We're at an empty spot on the tape. I guess the thing that I was thinking about is when I was in graduate school, at least I had the sense that the history professors decided who they were going to hire, had some voice in that, even though I didn't have too much of a notion that...
That we did not control. The president did the hiring. That was a pointed issue. And a lot of bad feeling about that. So he'd go out and hire someone, and we'd never know who it was, or what his field was, or what it would fit in well. And sometimes, as I said, he hired people who were not trained in their discipline and simply plunked them on us. He liked to hire people who were natives. If he found a native of India, he thought he could teach about Asia. Even though, you know, he might be an engineer and not a historian. That's why when he interviewed me, he was more interested in whether I'd been in the Far East than whether I'd studied the Far East. And whether I'd been in Europe than whether I'd studied Europe. If you've been there, you must know something about it. There was an inclination to move along those lines. I don't know what the background of Ryland Madison was, for example, but he was always a point of controversy. I'm sure he didn't have training in history, or perhaps not even one in the social sciences. He was brought in Latin American studies. There was somebody that was hired who was in India, whose name I forgot, native of India. Not a red Indian, but an Indian Indian. And I bitterly resented his coming in because I felt he had no academic training in Far Eastern history at all. Of course, one could have spent some time with India in Far Eastern history. Depends on how much time you've got. Maybe you'd call it Asian history then. That was a very definite point of issue. The heads of divisions, I don't think, had anything to say about the people that were hired. They may have. They may have looked at papers for all I know. But the interviewing was all done by the president, who went out on hiring tours. You would have gone out in the summer, and then you'd bring back a crop of people, and that's the new people you have the next year. You had nothing to say about it at all.
And this was true in every division?
I think it was generally true. Now, there were people that he got to be very friendly with, like Olson, who headed the fine arts section. It may be that when he got friendly with people, he ultimately was persuaded that he wasn't an expert on this and that somebody else should do the interviewing. But as far as I know, it was a long time before we got much to say about hiring and any of the special sciences. don't know when that happened. Of course, we didn't have any departmental structures. We were in a division of social science. And, that existed, even though we grew to maybe 30 or so in size.
When did you begin to think about having a department of history?
Well, it was after we moved up into this building, and after Andy Canelli became the division chairman in place of Gregory. It seems to me that the business people split off at some point, and then the remaining social sciences remained together, and that's when Canelli became the head of the social science division. A separate division or something was set up for business. And that's how Gregory and ourselves parted company. Well, Gregory also fell out with the administrators up front, the front shed as he used to call it, fell into disfavor for some reason. And so I guess we were able to revolt successfully against him and get a new leader. And of course Canelli was more traditional in terms of his training. And it was sometime after that we began to talk seriously of breaking up into departments. I don't know just what year that was. Probably could find it by going through bulletins and catalogs.
Yeah. Was there a big difference between the small lower campus situation and as you begin to move to the top of the hill and the college began to expand? Did it expand enough so you had fewer preparations?
Yes, I think we began to reach the point where we could take double sections of things. It all depended upon what you were teaching. If you were teaching American history, you could double up fairly early. I don't think I ever got double sections of any courses until well along, probably until the McIntosh era, in time, and we'd gotten big enough for that. Began to get two sections of a popular course like Europe Since 1914, which was my favorite course and the most popular course. I'd be able to get two sections of that. Then once we got graduate programs, we began to get seminars, and that was a little bit different than variety entered the picture at that point. But I pretty generally had three or four preparations all the time. On the other hand, the classes tended to be smaller. If you were in U.S. history, you had fewer preps and larger classes, so it was a bit of a set-off to a degree in that respect. But I added of the division, I had Empire and Britain Since Victoria. I think those were the two courses. And then later on, we added Tudor Stuart course. Kimball did that. Kimball got involved in American colonial history, which is partly his field. We began to divide English history in enough sections so we could do that. I also began teaching Western civilization.
Were there any other overt struggles between the administration and the faculty before the Black Martin case, or was that pretty much the next?
Nothing that had any broad ramifications. Well, there was, when did the matter of the accusations against Dr. Hardy in biology, did that come before or after the Martin Black thing?
I think they were near the same time.
But that was the only other major factor, and I don't know if that became a major center of controversy. A few people got interested in helping him fight the accusations that were made against him and persuaded the one Jew and so on. But I don't think that was a general campus struggle. It ultimately became integrated into the general fight, I think, at some point in time. I just don't know what the relative timing on those two things was anymore. No, I think so. We had a lot of fighting in social science over this general social science business, and that continued for a couple of years after the original blow-up, the first revolution, as I sometimes like to call it.
What happened? Did Dr. Gregory fell out with the administration, or?
I don't know. I don't really recall what happened.
But either
he fell out and lost his division chairmanship, or there was a splitting off of the business out of the school. I don't recall really. I don't think there was a split. I think he fell from favor, and other people took over. We had some old gentleman who came in, whose name I forgot for, forget now for a while. He may have been before Canelli. Strange how you don't remember these things, but I don't remember the details of that.
Okay.
Somebody else can explain what happened
okay.
on that.
What about the faculty council? When did that become important, or were you involved in it?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was an employee council which the president started. I think after the revolution, he was criticized. And one of the criticisms was that he didn't have machinery for interacting with the faculty at the university level. And he did set up a council. I think it was called an employee council. And he had staff and faculty mixed in it. Our representative was Metzger, Vernon Metzger. I don't know if you've interviewed him.
No.
Well, he's one of the very early ones. He probably remembers some of the things that I don't remember even better. He would be a good person to interview on a lot of this, because he'd remember a lot of these things, I'm sure. He was involved in that, which I remember he generally reported as something of a farce, and nobody thought that it had accomplished very much. The president also invited groups of faculty into his office for chit-chat. Told us jokes, sometimes appalled us, and engaged in chit-chat, which by and large didn't improve our opinion of him very much at all.
Why did his jokes appall you? What was their subject?
Some of them were kind of ethnic jokes. Some of them were stories about Mexican-American labor and the way it was treated up in the San Jose area, things like that. I remember there was a couple of things that came up. But I'm sure he was trying to be friendly, but there were no interactions. There may have been on behalf of some, on the part of some of the faculty who were more inclined to learn, and I guess some of us were not very inclined. And so, well, you're not inclined to be, we, friendly visits don't necessarily end up being much of a positive factor. But that's about all I remember happening. It may be that certain specific things of people that we began to get involved, at least the division chairman somewhat involved in hiring, I don't really know. I remember the name of somebody. His name was Woodbridge, Frederick Woodbridge. I don't know where he fits into the business, but he was a division chairman after Gregory and before Canelli. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think he was the business division chairman. Maybe he was the one that split off.
Well, all right. Well, anyway, I don't know if he was our chairman for a while before there was a split off or not. I have a funny feeling he may have been for a while. But things are certainly very much improved in terms of relationships in the social sciences with Canelli's appointment. Once Reagan was a real point of controversy.
Quinn, do you have any notion of how the employee council turned into a faculty council? Because by...
It didn't. No, I think the faculty council started in a completely different way. The faculty council was a product of the Martin and Black controversy. And the organization that fought the Martin and Black controversy was the Association of California State University Professors, ACSUP, as it was called at that time. Or was it ACS? Yeah, I think it was ACSUP. Of course, I joined it fairly early, and Kimball joined it. It was really the vehicle for opposition on campus. I remember some of us paid a visit to San Diego State, which we understood was working well, and there was involvement between faculty and administration of a more broad and general nature, and, involvement in the faculty and decisions on promotion and so on, hiring. So we went down to see how they operated and talked with some of the senior faculty down there. Some of the things we did when we organized this university with faculty involvement came from instruction. We also studied academic senates and organizations of various universities. Collected quite a pile of material on them, that sort of thing. But the faculty council itself grew out of the Martin and Black fight. And I've forgotten just how it was created. I wish I could remember how it was born. I was a member of it. I was, I think, secretary of it. I'd been secretary of the Faculty Faculty Administration Relations Committee, as it was called, which the ACSUP had set up. And the people that were involved in that were the people that went on and pressed for a faculty council and academic senate, fought for statewide academic senates. You know, the whole fight really, really developed from that point. So I was a secretary of that. It was the organization that called for hearings and got legislative hearings and met with officials like J. Merton Vache when he came down to investigate troubles on campus.
Did this give you contacts, other than at San Diego, at other state colleges?
Well, the ACSUP organization had chapters on various campuses, and they also had a state council. And many of us went to state council meetings or on occasion were elected to state council. So we found out a lot in that respect. The conditions vary very widely in the system. Some places, by and large, it was a fairly dictatorial, administratively controlled organization. Run something like the old public schools, we didn't have much involvement. Well, Kimball told me that public schools had more involvement than we used to have down here. No, I never taught at that level, so I didn't know anything about that. But I didn't bring from graduate school any conceptions of how the faculty should function in the organ. Those were things I learned mainly sort of studying it on the job here once we got down here.
So how was the faculty council organized? You said it was a reaction to the Martin and Black case, but...
Well, it must have been one of the things the faculty was demanding or asking for, and at some point it must have been conceded. That's all I can think by way of explanation. Whether this concession was made before the legislative hearings and the big blow-up, or just when, I don't really know. I don't remember the circumstances in which it was born.
I remember seeing in the library just a ditto sheet from the faculty council calling for the resignation of the president. Did that? Or not just the president, but the other administrators as well.
Yeah. I might have papers and things that go back to this period. Has your project interviewed Kimball yet?
No.
Well, he might possibly remember more about it. Mike Garver was the first chairman of the council. He's of course dead and gone. Sam Wiley was only the early chairman. He's gone. The constitution for the faculty council, Bob Wilder and I wrote. Bob Wilder's still around in English.
Yeah.
We were the draftsman of it. I don't know if you're on the early drafts and so on.
No, I don't think so.
Don't they exist anywhere?
Oh, they might exist. Yeah. I haven't seen them. I haven't searched the library.
Yeah. Well, my feeling is that I might have some files that go back to this very early period. Files on this revolutionary controversy, if I were to dig around at home. It might be that Kimball has some materials. The other person who would know a great deal about it would be Metzger, who was very much involved. Members of the early council and people that were involved in the science side were George Appleton and Kramer Schultz. In education, Mike Garver, who else was involved? I'm trying to think of anybody that's still here.
A report on this was written by Professor Fogg.
A report?
Some sort of a report, I think, on the Black Martin case.
Oh, yeah, that's another matter. Fogg was involved fairly early. I don't think he was a member of the council in the very beginning, but he might have been.
Well, what was the function of the council? Was it to provide faculty representation or to get?
Yeah, it was to become a functioning kind of faculty representative body to deal with university-wide issues. And the early constitution provided for investigating things like the Martin and Black case grievances and all that. It's a scheme for doing that that we grew up. We set up a committee system. I don't know whether it was this early that the idea of a committee on committees as a means of a kind of controlling the faculty that would be on key committees, having this a function of faculty determination rather than administrative determination. Well, that's an idea we got from San Diego, incorporated at a very early point. I don't know if that's in the early constitution or not. I think it is.
Would you say that the actions of the faculty council brought about the legislative hearing?
No, I think that was brought about through the Faculty Administration Relations Committee, which I think if you looked at the membership of this ACSCP organization, or maybe it was ACSCI then, I think it was ACSCI then, instructors rather than professors. If you looked at the membership of it and the early membership of the council, you'd find an awful lot of correspondence. A lot of the people that were involved in the one committee became the elected representatives in the faculty council. So I think the legislative hearing and all the rest of this were gotten really more by this outside agency, which was free to operate politically in a way that the other. one of our contacts with the legislature was a young person who got into Congress out here in Orange County. Later on, got in difficulty with the law, a Korean scam, you know about that.
So I guess I'm not clear about the relationship between the Faculty Administration Relations Committee, FARC, the larger California Instructors Organization, California College Instructors Association, and the Faculty Council.
Well, the Faculty Administration Relations Committee was a creation of the chapter, local chapter, of the ACSCI.
Yeah.
Each local chapter had a representative on a state board. The state board wasn't involved. I think maybe we tried to get them involved, but I don't think they got very much involved in that. And what the chapter did was they selected some people that they figured would be willing to fight hard and to the end. And job on them of carrying the fight. I mean, they were sort of a coordinating and executive committee for the fight, which was being waged. I remember some dramatic events. For example, I think this Faculty Administration Relations Committee at one point received an instruction from the chapter to meet with the president. If they didn't get satisfaction, to go to Sacramento and complain. And I remember very distinctly that we met with the president. We got no satisfaction. We got in our cars and we drove to Sacramento and asked for an appointment with Vache and with Roy Simpson and other people to complain. I was on that expedition. So was Metzger on that expedition. So was Mike Garver. Probably Howard Kimball was on it. Appleton or Schultz was with us. Maybe both of them. So it was this organization that was confronting the administration. And it was this organization that first met with Burton Vache when he came down. This organization that prepared, well, I don't know, but it was prepared most of the controversial literature, broadsides and complaints and statements of grievance and, you know, all the other stuff. A good part of it I wrote, to tell you the honest truth. Not by myself, but being secretary of the committee, I sat around and listened and put it down on paper and tried to formulate it. A lot of it was written collectively, but a good part of it I phrased and wrote.
Well, what happened when you got to Sacramento?
Yeah. Now, it may come back to me if I start thinking about it. I've thought about any of these things for so many years. I think we got some sort of a hearing. Now, I think that's what provoked people then coming down onto campus and meeting and looking into the matter. But I honestly don't recall. I was inclined to sit back a bit. Other people tended to be more bold when these meetings took place than I was. I don't really recall what happened on that famous occasion. Another person that may have been with us was Jesse Allen in the business school. I used to call himself J. Bishop Allen, after J. Burton Vache. Well, I'm sorry, I really, without looking,
yeah.
If I had a few documents, I could put it together.
Okay.
And I don't know what they have over in the library and so on. Until you begin to interview other people, it may be that Metzger or Kimball or somebody have a very clear memory of how all this happened. Your fog will have a clear memory of all this happened, be willing to tell you. I'm a lot less clear about that. But if you've seen any of the documents at all, you realize that the Martin and Black affair soon became only one of a long list of grievances, and these grievances really extended to the fact that he was not involved in hiring and personnel decisions. We had no personnel documents and policies, and that we weren't involved in educational policy and planning, and the overall direction of the university. So the thing expanded into a great many areas and became a much more general document. I think by this time the Hardy matter had gotten involved in it in some way. It was part of the general complaints. Were there things like the old complaints about anti-Semitism or anything in that or not? But you know, they were there, I know, in the first columnist, and they may have continued.
Do you remember receiving any support from the community of Long Beach at large?
Not really, some from students and alumni. We tried to, some people that knew Barney Atkinson, who was sort of dean of students or something like that up at UCLA, was on the State Board of Education. And we used to go up and talk with him. It turned out he was a pretty good friend of Peterson's, and so talking to him was not a terribly good idea. It simply meant that, I maybe a lot of things got back there. And, never was able to find that out fully. But we did try to get in touch with board members. Tried to enlist some of them in our cause. We even talked to trustees of the University of California for reasons that are completely obscure to me now. Some of them have thought they have a great deal of influence in the state. We talked with members of the legislature.
Yeah, we kind of went by Richard Hanna in a hurry.
Yeah.
Do you feel like he was of any help to you? Or?
Yes, he certainly was. He probably helped get the hearing that eventually took place. I was given the job of making the initial presentation of that hearing. I remember being just absolutely terrified, frightened to death.
In what way? I mean, were you afraid you would lose your job ultimately, or?
No, it's just the idea of appearing in that kind of a environment just simply. And I go in front of a class and all, I can work with the committee, but speaking to large audiences is something I've never done, and I'd certainly never done anything like appearing before a legislative committee. So just the idea of doing it was just simply made me extremely nervous and practically ill. But I did it. those were some real difficult times, such a, for me, really, personal crisis, and I had to really take myself in hand. To carry on and do it with what my colleagues expected of me, I guess you would say, as part of the team. We were very close, a group of people that were devoted to what we thought was a cause. We stood together and fought together and supported each other. There was a great sense of camaraderie and all the rest that was part of it. I suppose that's part of any revolutionary movement, which is what the census was. We were sort of romantic revolutionaries in a way, I guess. Perhaps a little romantic about what magnificent things the faculty would do with power when they received it, some of which we might now be, some of us a little bit disillusioned with, I suppose, but that's the way it was. I'm sure it was the committee, the FARC, that carried the initial fight. And I remember Garber was chairman of that, and I was secretary. And I'll remember four or five. The real ones went off to Sacramento. Trail out documentation. So one of our demands was for faculty participation. Somewhere along the line, I think the faculty council fell out of that. And so it began to be born before the fight was over. Now, again, I'd have to look at the chronology, but it seems to me after the hearing and all the rest, nothing really happened. Peterson remained president for several years, and it was only somewhat later that he resigned. he didn't resign, as I remember, immediately upon any of this happening. So the faculty council was sort of born in the midst of this and then carried on. Peterson remained president. The confrontations, I think, in some respects, went on. But one would have to get into the minutes and look at the situation and have to see what the chronology is on that. Without some papers, I think it's very hard to reconstruct it. Some people have very clear memories of these things. So that's why, if you can focus on a period of time rather than maybe exhaust one person's interviewing, it might be a good idea to talk to other people that were involved in some of these things. And then when you finish that incident, then you can go on and talk about some other things. Because ultimately, of course, the faculty would organize a senate and committees and became very involved. I've served on several key committees and got to know President McIntosh quite well in that capacity.
Okay. So ultimately, though, Dr. Peterson was not reappointed. He did resign.